Blog Talk Radio.
From the brutal assaults of the local political class, especially the menace of Mesilla Valley against teen girls, and hoping for his removal while broadcasting from a tiny, undercharged, technologically impoverished yet politically engaged single wide trailer. Good morning, Kelly O'Connell. Today is Tuesday, January the 20th, 2015. A few items here. Number one, I did an interview with Steve Pierce over the weekend, and I'm going to play that, I think, Thursday, Friday this week. It was pretty interesting. We've got the State of the Union coming up, and I had done a show, in case you didn't catch it yesterday, which I don't know how many people don't listen in when there's a holiday, but did a segment on the New Mexico Representative Bill McCamley assaulting this girl at this, who was trying to gather signatures. And I just to let you know, using a legal definition of assault and battery, assault is to put someone in fear of an imminent attack, and battery is to, you know, attack them, touch them, whatever. And had a kind of an interaction with Keith Welpley and a guy that comes on his show a lot after my show, kind of on the way out the door. And then I called into the show, if you were listening to that, to straighten something out. But I just wanted to point out that one of the things that I forgot to mention when I called into his show was that McCamley admitted the event took place, and Keith was challenging me that he said basically I don't believe it, or I think his interpretation is it has to be proved to me before I will accept it. And you know what had happened was already admitted on Facebook by McCamley, and he said, you know, I didn't yell at her, I was talking loudly to her. And I wasn't chasing her, I was following her. Now, if you're an attorney, you know, as a defense attorney, that's a problem, because, you know, you want your client to basically not talk or deny everything in the beginning. And I don't mean you want your client to lie, but basically by denying, I mean you put in into the court, if you're client is charged as a criminal in a criminal matter, you want your client to either put in the plea of not guilty or just shut up. You know, I mean, the plea in court will be not guilty to start off. That's what starts everything off. And then you want your client to either not say anything. Basically, that's what you want. So a lot of attorneys will ask their clients as soon as they get hired, please take down your Facebook, because believe it or not, the district attorneys across the United States use Facebook and other social media to get evidence out of. Because people a lot of times will use a Facebook as a confessional or as a way of, you know, making their case and everything. And you want to do that in the court to begin with. And you also don't want your client coming out and saying stuff that is either a confession or that can easily be misinterpreted. So McCamley came out and did that. And, you know, I called on him to resign when I heard about this, but I've already called on him to resign. I already called because I just don't think he's got the temperament and he doesn't have the people's interest. But we did this show on this, and we're going to, trust me, we're going to get into this more. And this girl is thinking of pressing charges against McCamley. So what happened was she's out canvassing. You know, she's going from door to door trying to get signatures for this recall. We talked about the recall before. And the guy that's running the recall, Jeff Isbell, has been on the show. And by the way, 523-1450, and I forgot to read your text yesterday, so I'll read those from yesterday as well. But she's going door-to-door, and she goes up to this house and knocks, and the lady comes to the door. And the lady says, you know, how's it going, and what are you here for? And so the girl says, well, we're doing this petition to have a recall. So the lady says, oh, okay. And will you sign this? So she signs it. Just then a truck pulls up, car pulls up. This is the story that I've been told. And, you know, Keith and his guest were basically, you know, why don't you fact check? Why don't you, you know, and I'm like, you know, all right. Well, the vast majority, this is what I'm saying, in a legal, if you ever get in trouble, don't go onto Facebook and spill your guts, or don't go onto Facebook and tell your side of the story, because that's not a legal forum. And the reason that you hire an attorney is to get a legal take on stuff. And I'm not telling anybody to lie, but what I'm saying is what I was saying, you know, the attorney doesn't want the defendant to tell the truth. That's not what I'm saying at all. What I'm saying is that we have a legal system. It's the greatest in the history of the world. And the system is designed that the state has to prove that the defendant is guilty. So the last thing that you want to do is use an alternative method of telling your story. You see what I'm saying? Anyway, so this lady, when this teen girl is there, and this teen girl is a Native American, she's about, I guess, 5 feet tall, you know, small. And she's like 18, 19. She's here going to school for her first year at NMSU. All right. The lady says, you know, this guy that's pulling up might want to sign this too. Apparently not really cognizant of everything that's going on in the Las Cruces, in the world of Las Cruces. So when this guy pulls up and he comes up to the door, he basically gets very upset when he finds out why the girl's there. And from what I understand, and this has all just been passed on to me, it is liable to being restated or you know, this story that I've been telling can be in the specifics could be updated or whatever, but this is generally what happened is what I've been told, that this guy got angry and basically either hinted or yelled at, whatever, got irritated at the person in the house. Now, it just so happens the guy owned the house and he's renting it to this lady. And the guy happened to be Bill McCamley. He's the representative from the Mesilla area and other places. And he then turns his attentions towards the teen girl and, from what I understand, begins to verbally, whatever, he raises his voice, and at some point he begins to follow her. Now, according to McCamley, and this is in deference to, you know, Keith and really making sure that he's given his opportunity to have his side out there. McCamley's version, I believe, is that he tried to talk to her and she walked away. And so he followed her and kept talking to her. Now, how far he followed her, I don't know. How loud he was, I don't know. But he has admitted doing that much. Bear that in mind, that I didn't bring some just radical one-person side of the story on the show yesterday. I'm just letting you know that. I wouldn't want to do that. he's already gone onto Facebook and admitted that the basics of this story. All right. So if you're a prosecutor and you see that, you're happy. You're happy because the now you just have to haggle over the details. Who's got the most accurate view? All right. Now, according to the girl and another person who was witnessing it, McCamley got angry and started to shout and started following her, this girl, and the girl started to run, and McCamley started chasing her, and this girl at some point became worried or convinced that she was going to get physically attacked. That's her side of the story, where she was panicking and running down the street with her clipboard. Now, another person who was her supervisor saw this and has made the statement. It's Pam Wolf, and Pam Wolf is a friend of mine. She said that if she had had her carry, her pistol, she would have considered pulling the pistol out and getting between McCamley and this girl, or trying to get McCamley's attention. I did not say, and I do not think it's true, that she would have felt like she had to shoot. I'm not saying that. But then again, I'm not even sure, because I need to get this lady, Pam Wolf, to get on and tell what she saw. And she may not. She may want to save it for a courtroom. And the teen girl may want to save it for the court. So anyway, that's what happened. And when I was saying, what I called into Keith's show yesterday was to point out, I've been on the receiving end, crazy anger and just subjective, impetuous, kind of off the cuff, unfair, and really just, I don't know how to sum this up, this art gallery thing, this meeting that I was part of this group and trying to help get this guy a museum, and McCamley shows up and goes around to each person there, from what I understand, and trashes me and asks what in the blankety blank do I think that I'm doing there. Now mind you, McCamley I've been to every meeting for this group for like 6 months. McCamley is no part of this whatsoever. Ever. He didn't know anything about anything in this meeting. He just saw me there, realized that, he doesn't like me. He's angry at me. Because why? Because I've been rude to him? No, because I happen to disagree with him. And that's when he went around and, to me, totally betrayed his constituency by personally attacking me because he doesn't like me, even though he was invited there because he's a member of the Congress, New Mexico Congress. And that's why, and I waited about a year, I think I waited a year before I said anything to anybody, but then I realized I had an obligation to let the listeners know what kind of a person he was, because he was running again for representative, and that's really why. And so it's a person. I mean, all people have ambitions. People who get into office have ambitions. They have convictions, but that doesn't justify you going personally after somebody. I mean, it's you're supposed to be representing the interest of your constituency. I've got a call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, good morning. This is Greg.
Hey, Greg. Hey, I want to thank you again for the call yesterday. I thought it was you nailed it on the head.
Oh, well, thanks, man. Okay, just a quick note. I don't know if you caught it or not, but after you called in on Keith's show, his guest stated on the air that Bill is either employed by him or has worked for him.
Yes.
And I thought that was the reason why they were just heaping the platitudes upon platitudes.
Yeah. And it's funny because I didn't realize it. And the guy is Mel O'Honick, and he does these things for taking solar energy. He's a solar energy. I think he sells solar panels.
Right.
So anyway,
right.
And I forgot that Bill was a salesman for him, which explains why he stepped into my face and said, you're wrong, Kelly. And what I was saying to Keith was at the time, and I don't have a beef with this guy, Mello Honeck. I've talked to him maybe 10 seconds in my whole life. And he sometimes covers Keith's show, but he stepped into my face and said that I'm wrong. And I'm like, why is this guy? I wasn't even talking to him. And he's like, but he's in the room. And you know, this studio room's small. I was talking to Keith, and I told Keith he was wrong to not be more open-minded. And I think to be fair to Keith, what Keith was trying to say is, I'm not going to believe this until it's proved, which I think is a reasonable standard for anybody. And I think it's
sure.
give people the benefit of the doubt. But my response to Keith was, don't turn your nose up when eyewitnesses and evidence is coming out and tell me that you know this guy and he wouldn't do it. So that was my take on what he said. You're saying he couldn't do this because you know him. I think Keith's position was, I'm going to give this guy a benefit of the doubt. And then Honeck steps in my face, and I didn't remember at the time. I was trying to remember, trying to figure out why he had such a strong reaction. It's because he knows the guy, and the guy works for him. So I understand that makes me feel a little bit better.
Absolutely. And you know what? Eventually, it's all going to come out in the wash. So let's just see what happens, and have a good morning.
Yeah, you too. Thanks for the call. And I got a text from somebody. They're talking about you, and I was home at that point because, you know, the court was closed yesterday. So I turned on the radio and was listening and stuff, and then I felt like I wanted to address it. But I think that the general principle is everybody gets a chance to tell their story. I believe in that 100%. And everybody gets to should have somebody come along. Our justice system is designed this way. If you're accused of something, if you can't afford an attorney, you get an attorney from the state to defend your position. I don't have a problem with that with Keith and Honeck, but I don't think it's right if you're stand for the proposition that I know this person and they would never do anything like that. I've seen this guy make crazy. I mean, it's crazy to go around at a meeting that you're not even part of, that you really don't know anything about, and personally pick somebody out that you don't like to denigrate them, to trash them to other people and demand to know why that person is there. That's like mentally unbalanced. And that's why I don't think he's a good representative. He's got his own agenda. He's very emotional. He's a loose cannon. And he's not above attacking people at the drop of a hat on something that's totally unrelated to what's going on, just so he can settle the score, which I don't understand. I mean, I never did one thing to the guy before that. Anyway, Kelly O'Connell, a little bit over time. We'll take a break here and be right back. This is AM 1450, 523-1450 to call in, 805-6180 to text. And I don't care. Look, I don't care if you defend McCamley, but have it based on a fact, not just because you like him or he's part of your political movement. We'll be right back at 6:24.
Do you own a travel trailer, motorhome, or boats? If so, you need to know that the off-season is the best time to get the repairs and service at the best prices of the year. And Fun Country RVs in Marina and Anthony is the best place to get it done. Fun Country RV service team, Cesar Molina and David Servine, service all types and models. They have the experience to repair or replace all of your problems, from collision repair work to roof repair and replacement.
My name is Lake Dochley, and I recently purchased my first RV. It was used and had been sitting for years without being driven and needed tons of repairs. The roof had some leaks, and I was told that it needed to be replaced with a tune of several thousand dollars. But Fun Country was able to coat and reseal the roof for a fraction of the price. They fixed everything from the generator, stove, and refrigerator to the awning. I was very pleased with the work and the prices. I'll definitely go back to Fun Country for all my repair work.
Remember, Fun Country RVs and Marine also offers mobile service to Las Cruces and El Paso. Don't wait till the busy spring season to get your RV or boat in shape. Call Fun Country today or log on to FunCountryRVs.com. Fun Country RVs and Marine, I-10 at Anthony, exit 0.
Looking for a better way to shop for your next new Honda? Come to the all-new redesigned Gorman Autoplex at Las Cruces. With Autoplex exclusive one-price savings clearly marked on every new Honda in stock, there's no haggling over price, and it doesn't take hours to shop. No hype or pressure, just 20 acres of America's best brands with the absolute lowest price clearly marked. you can get a 2015 Honda CR-V LX for just $21,599 after all discounts. How's that for one price savings? Or come to the Autoplex for a new 2015 Civic LX sedan with AC and more, only $16,999. The area's largest selection, all in one place, without any of the games. Buying a car is easy with one price savings on the lot or online at foremanautoplex.com. H06-2141 and H06-2125 after all rebates, discounts, dealer trade discount. TTNL Extra, see dealer for details.
Now get the local buzz. News from Las Cruces and the region on KOBE, AM 1450.
Despite the mild temperatures that have been the norm this winter, we will still have to remember that we are in flu season and the CDC wants to remind everyone to get vaccinated. New Mexico is considered a high-risk state for the flu, but so far, here in southern New Mexico, the flu isn't as widespread as in other parts of the state. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't take any precautions, and you should definitely consider getting yourself vaccinated if you haven't already. February and March tend to be the worst time of the year for the flu, and even though the vaccination is for a different type of flu that has been going around, it will still guard against other flu viruses that are making their rounds. And according to Cecilia Sanchez, a nurse with the New Mexico Department of Health, it's still not too late to get yourself immunized. The Las Cruces Police Department is looking for a witness to a fatal motorcycle accident that happened over the weekend. John Sullivan was pronounced dead at Memorial Medical Center after his motorcycle collided with a truck on Sunday afternoon near the intersection of Crawford Boulevard and Frontage Road. The person driving the pickup was uninjured in the crash. If you witnessed this tragic accident, police investigators will speak with you, and you can contact them at 575-528-4128. More details are emerging about last week's shooting that left police on the manhunt for a suspect. At 5:30 p.m. on Thursday, police received a call about a shooting. The victim, Pete Limon, was found lying in the street with a gunshot wound to his stomach. The apparent shooter, Gustavo Alvarado, had already fled. According to neighbors, Limon was acting strangely and screaming, and Alvarado came out of his trailer to see what was going on. At that point, Limon then attacked him. Alvarado went back into his trailer and retrieved a shotgun and opened fire. Limon is currently in El Paso's University Medical Center, where he is listed as being in critical condition. Las Cruces Crime Stoppers is offering a reward for any information that may help apprehend Alvarado. You can reach them at 800-222-8477. The NAACP is asking for the community's help in restoring a segregation-era graveyard that has fallen into disrepair. The community cemetery is the resting place of at least 65 African Americans that did not have a choice as to where they would be buried, as segregation laws forced the black community at the time to bury their loved ones in an out-of-the-way cemetery. Because of the historical significance of the cemetery, the NAACP would like it to be cleaned up and renovated in time for the 150th anniversary of the Emancipation Proclamation. If you would like more information or would like to help, you can reach the Doñana County branch of the NAACP at 575-224-2643. For the Bravo Mike Radio Network, I'm Jose Chaparro.
Options. Having one is great, but having nine is better. Toyota's got a great lineup of vehicles with available all-wheel drive and four-wheel drive to get you on the road to where you're going. Take the 4Runner, for example. Powerful enough to handle nature at its most challenging. Or the commanding Tacoma, a pickup that can get you through just about any weather in any season. If you're looking for a spacious vehicle, it's time to check out the Sienna. Want great style that can handle adventure too? RAV4 sounds like the ride for you. How about the versatility of a comfortable yet sophisticated ride? The Venza's got you covered. The fact is, with cool tech and impressive safety features throughout, there's really no reason to look further than the excellent lineup of Toyota vehicles. Ready to check out one of Toyota's awesome available all-wheel drive or four-wheel drive vehicles for yourself? Head straight to your nearest Toyota dealer or find yours at Toyota.com. Toyota, let's go places.
Visit Vescovo Toyota, home of the Vescovo value. Or for more information, please log on to Toyota.com. That's Toyota.com.
The Doñana Arts Council presents Cirque Zuma Zuma Saturday, January 31st at the Rio Grande Theater. Cirque Zuma Zuma brings all the mysticism, magic, and excitement of the African continent to Las Cruces for a stellar night of astonishing physicality. Cirque Zuma Zuma has been called a blend of Cirque du Soleil and the Harlem Globetrotters, filled with acrobatic ingenuity. Doors open at 7 p.m. and the performance begins at 7:30 p.m. Tickets can be purchased in advance on the website at www.riograndtheater.com or at the box office. For more information, visit the website or call 575-523-6403.
It is Kelly here, and so I've got there is this controversy that's coming up with the New England Patriots cheating again, is the claim. Here's a clip on it. It has to do with ball inflation, believe it or not. during this this AFC Championship. Check it out. Or is it NFC?
This is inflated. In the wake of New England's drawing and quartering of the Indianapolis Colts last night, the NFL confirmed an Indianapolis TV report that it is following up on what had been an unexplained moment in the third quarter last night when officials took a ball out of play, evidently to weigh it, evidently suspecting the Pats had partially deflated it, which would make it easier for their guys to throw it and catch it. When this was still just an Indianapolis rumor, Tom Brady was able to dismiss it with a cavalier nonchalant elan. I think I've heard it all at this point, he said. That's the last of my worries. I don't even respond to stuff like this. I got 99 problems, but the Duke ain't one. You may recall USC was caught deflating footballs in 2012. Also that the Patriots have been caught doing everything except performing witchcraft against their opponents. And that home teams in various sports over the years have been accused and or convicted of muddying infields to slow down opposing base stealers, turning domed stadium and arena air blowers on or off as needed, using different sized goal nets, basketball rims, and baseballs, and in the case of the Oakland Raiders, and admitted by John Madden, keeping exterminators out of the visiting locker room and telling the opponents to watch out for the rats. To flush out the NFL's stagflation crisis and the other headlines on day one of the annual agony that is the two-week Super Bowl countdown, I'm joined now by ESPN's NFL insider, Chris Mortensen. Mort, how are you?
Good, Keith. I thought you laid a nice foundation to this topic.
Thank you. I do what I can. So what is the topic? What's going on with Deflategate here?
Well, the NFL is investigating this. A number of footballs that were found to be underinflated. Before the game, each team basically has 12 footballs that the referee has inspected 2.5 hours or 2 hours and 15 minutes before a game and approved for use. Now, the league sends a dozen footballs to each team to go ahead and properly prepare and especially have the quarterbacks take a look at them, but they still have to be inflated properly between 12.5 and 13.5 pounds. And in this case, the Colts may have suspected something when they played the Patriots in the previous regular season game, and then sure enough, they did remove some footballs from the game that they did not feel were properly inflated or weighed the proper amount. And so, therefore, you know, what advantage did it give to the Patriots who won this game 45-7? That's the bigger question, but the league is looking into it. And if there's found to be some violation, this will be settled after the Super Bowl. And, you know, whether it's a fine up to $25,000 or something like that, something will happen if it's found to be a violation.
So there's no way they find that it's a violation punishable by 38 points lost, right?
That's correct. So I think it was Ron Jaworski who said you could have used a frisbee in this game. It still probably would have been 45-7. But you're right. I mean, listen, quarterbacks being able to throw the ball better in inclement weather, receivers able to catch it. Some people think running backs able to not fumble. You know, new footballs have a film over it, so that's why each team is allowed to prepare the football, but they still have to give up those footballs to the officials 2 hours and 15 minutes before the game, not to be touched in-game by anybody.
And clearly the ones from Indianapolis have been deflated completely, which explains what happened to them. All right, so the Super Bowl is set. We've got a million lines to talk about in the next 2 weeks. That's what these 2 weeks are for. Which storyline you like most?
You know, I really like the concept of Pete Carroll playing the New England Patriots, because Pete Carroll was fired by Robert Kraft, the owner of the Patriots, in order for Bill Belichick to come on board and start this Super Bowl run that he's been on. And, you know, it's interesting because Teddy Bruschi, who loves Bill Belichick, who was drafted by Bill Parcells, still credits Pete Carroll for developing his talent in the NFL as much as any coach he's ever had. And Pete's still a little bit bitter about being fired. He wasn't a total failure in that New England Patriots job. So that story right there, and certainly, let's face it, the Patriots went for a perfect season in this very same stadium in Glendale, Arizona, and had it ruined by the New York Giants.
Yep, a good one, although we will talk it into the ground in the next 2 weeks.
Yes, we will.
Something else that happened today, and being today was the extraordinary part of this, I thought. The Fritz Pollard Alliance, which you could call the league.
Well, anyway, so we've got this game coming up, and there's a couple of injured Seattle Seahawks, and Richard Sherman, who's probably the most hated guy in the league right now because he's always talking about how he is the greatest or he's the best corner in the game right now. He was on a play, and this safety named Cam Chancellor came up, was going after a guy that had caught a ball or was running the ball, whatever. And so somehow Richard Sherman reaches his hands out and gets caught between these two people going in opposite directions, and he gets a sprain on his elbow. and it's not clear why they didn't go after this guy. So anyway, who do you pick in this game? And do you think that it is time that we start talking about GOAT again, which is the greatest of all time with Tom Brady? He's been to more Super Bowls than any other quarterback. He's won three. He's lost two. This is his sixth one. And is he now back? He's obviously in the conversation for the greatest of all time. But if he wins a fourth, is
highlight your textbook.
Is he to be considered the great? I mean, you know, it's just to a certain extent. You know, there is no greatest of all time in some sense that it's not like God comes along and points out, you know, this person's the greatest player of all time and settle it. But you can make an argument for that. Now, here I've got another sports story for you. This is a girl by the name of Shanice Clark, and she's from Toronto, Canada. She played for, I can't even really figure out, but she's a 6 foot girl who played a college basketball was found dead in her bed, and they investigated and found out that she had accidentally choked on gum while sleeping. Isn't that bizarre? And this is from the Daily Mail UK. But she, it's just, it's a very strange story. So she is at the, what I don't understand is that she was at the California University of Pennsylvania, which doesn't really make any sense to me. But anyway, so she was a pretty good basketball player, but I thought that was a very strange and kind of sad way to die. Okay, folks, I've got for you some. And this is, he is the king of alt country. Ryan Adams, Stay With Me, from a new album called Ryan Adams. And Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. 805-6180 to call in. We'll be right back on KOBE, the Kelly O'Connell Show, at 6:38. It is Kelly here, and good morning to you. Now, not a whole lot going on in the state that I can find. Here's a story about New Mexico lawmaker pushing for pot legalization. It's Albuquerque Democrat Jerry Ortiz E. Pino filed a constitutional amendment that would regulate marijuana like alcohol and taxing it, making it legal for those 21 and older, and it's going to have a hard time making it to the ballot, I guess, and because now that the House is in the hands of the Republicans, and I've got a little story about that for you too here. How do you feel about that? Do you think it's inevitable that we're going to legalize marijuana? And it's just the sense of inevitability is out there. Or do you think it's a fight worth having? Now, if you talk to DAs and cops, you know, to a large extent, these people are not in favor of it, and they see it as a gateway drug. So, anyway, 523-1450-805-6180. Here is your clip on the legislative session opening up with the Republican House majority for the first time in 60 years. And this is from KOB and from the 19th from yesterday.
Tomorrow, many lawmakers are expecting one issue to be a dominant one. It's right to work, a plan to end required union membership for some jobs in New Mexico. Stuart Dyson's live at the Capitol now in Santa Fe. And Stu, how soon do we expect right to work to take center stage up there?
Well, Tom, it could happen real fast. So the expectation is that it probably will. Several right-to-work bills are already pre-filed, and so they're ready to go for their first committee hearings. And with Republicans now in control of the House of Representatives, it's going to be almost impossible for Democrats to hold things up there. Right to work means no more compulsory union membership. Union leaders see it as a Republican effort to choke off the flow of union dues and weaken organized labor's political muscle. Republicans say it'll attract employers and create jobs. Democrats meeting in Albuquerque this morning pledging to fight right to work.
That does not create jobs. What it does do, of course, is take away the ability of labor to fight for fair wages.
Nate Gentry of Albuquerque is the House Republicans' new floor leader.
People should have the freedom to join a union and contribute to a union if they want to, but it shouldn't be a condition of employment.
Another employment issue, minimum wage. Democrats want to raise it.
When working people have more money in their pockets, working people spend more money in their communities. They spend more money in our small businesses. They support the coffee shop down the street.
But hang on. House Republican leaders say they're willing to consider a minimum wage increase, a surprise to many here at the Capitol. There is a shadow that's looming over this session, even before it actually starts at noontime tomorrow. Oil prices remain in a slump below $50 a barrel. That means less severance tax money coming in than was expected. Less money for the lawmakers to work with as they craft a budget to run state government and run the public schools and the public universities. Back to you.
All right, Stu, and this is the first time in more than six decades that Republicans control the state House. Here is the current makeup. Out of 70 members, 37 are Republicans and 33 are Democrats. Democrats still control the Senate with 25 members compared to 17 for the GOP. And the majority leader, Democrat Michael Sanchez, has the power to choose which bills are heard on the Senate floor. The legislative session ends on March 21st. Then Governor Susana Martinez has until April 10th to sign the bills that make it through. The 60-day legislative session kicks off with Governor Martinez giving her State of the State address tomorrow. It is set to happen around noon. You can watch it live at KOB.com.
Okay, and another story here, shifting gears a little bit, Belen, New Mexico. A teacher's assistant, an educational assistant, is accused of crossing the line, according to KRQE. She had sex with an underage student. This is another one of these. This is so hard for me to understand. There's so many of these female teachers out there that are having sex with their students. And it just seems like things have really changed so much. So many of these women are at least relatively attractive. Many of them are married. And how do you explain it? You know, it's almost incomprehensible to me that these ladies would take their careers and their reputations in hand and, you know, for what? I mean, what do you, you're having an affair with a 15-year, you're a woman, you're married, you have kids. What are you going to gain from having an affair with a 15-year-old football player? I'm just curious, where is it going to head, you know? Anyway, here is... from KRQE, brief little spot here.
Mercy cares by helping kids in need to get a brand new pair of tennis shoes.
Oops,
just dropped them off
there.
At new Papa Murphy's Take and Bake Pizza in Albuquerque,
right, so
Rio Rancho,
right,
and Santa Fe. You'll receive half off any pizza
and
for
again,
every new pair
female,
of shoes you bring in.
Relatively attractive female She's having an affair
of
with
going
a student.
Too far.
And,
an educational assistant.
Here it is.
Of going too far. and educational assistant who had sex with an underage student. Now she's behind bars, facing a long list of charges, and the community she's supposed to serve isn't happy. News 13's Cole Miller has their reaction.
Yeah, Alice, it's not clear how long this relationship was going on, but that woman is looking at quite a few charges. As you can imagine, this news isn't sitting well with parents.
It's sad. It's sad that things like that are happening in this small town.
People we talked to in Berlin are not happy.
I hope they take care of this.
But Victoria Baker, seen here in her mugshot, appears to be grinning.
We're counting on the teachers and the aides to take care of our kids, our students.
The 34-year-old was arrested Friday. New Mexico State Police says Baker was having sex with a Berlin High School student. That's where she worked as an educational assistant.
That shouldn't be going on.
She's also accused of giving that student booze.
Anytime that you have an educational assistant that has been charged with contributing to the delinquency of a minor and criminal sexual penetration of a minor, it's definitely disturbing.
It's not clear how long Baker has been working at the school, how long this was going on, or where it all happened.
There's a lot of good people in Berlin, and so when you hear stories like that, you don't want a story like that to bring the whole town down.
I also have two teenage kids that go to high school, you know, so that kind of worries me to know that this stuff is going on in our area.
Baker is now locked up at the Valencia County Detention Center.
I hope she really feels bad about it and, you know, gets injustice served.
Now here's a breakdown of what Baker is charged with. She's looking at 6 counts of sexual penetration of a minor, 8 counts of contributing to the delinquency of a minor, 2 counts of child neglect, and tampering with evidence. Alex, back to you.
Okay, Cole, thanks. Online court records don't reveal much of a criminal past for Baker. She's being held on a $300,000 cash or surety bond.
She does look like she's grinning in her, her, I don't know. I mean, I just, there are so many women doing this that you've got to assume that there is this message out in the society that this kind of thing is okay. So why, I mean, people get outraged. There are so many people that use pornography, and then there's so many people, apparently, I don't know what it is, but somehow women have gotten the message that it is okay. I think there is this, obviously, this subculture of kind of subclass of women that are kind of enchanted with this idea of, I don't know, with like breaking some kid in. And then people get outraged, which I understand that, but this country has gone so far in the direction of libertinism. Yeah, I mean, like, it's like the national sport isn't the NFL, it's sex. You know, the thing that people fight for, and just, I think you can see this in the gay marriage battle, gay rights fight, is that sex is this thing that is almost worshipped in this country, or is worshipped, and therefore any part of it other than, you know, pedophilia is totally defended. But, you know, even in pedophilia, you look at a place like Pennsylvania, where this guy, Jerry Sandusky, for years and years was molesting these kids, and it was reported and nobody did anything about it. I don't know. 523-1450. Anyway, here's a little bit of Jeff Allen, teenager. Oh, no, we've got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Okay, it's Mike.
Yeah, Mike, what's on your mind?
Kelly, I just want to know, where were these teachers when we were going to school?
Are you feeling a little bitter?
Yeah, I feel like I've been deprived.
Now, let me ask you this, Mike, a serious question. Do you think it is different from a societal or maybe psychological angle? Is it apples and oranges different if a boy gets seduced versus a girl by a teacher?
Yeah, it is. You know, I mean, I don't know too many guys that would complain. I mean, I could see maybe girls coming, but I think it's like most of these younger guys' dream, you know, hot for teacher, you know, like the Van Halen video.
Yeah, but when we were growing up, there was this clear line between teacher and student that doesn't seem to exist anymore. Do you think, bearing that in mind, do you think that the authorities, just going along with what you're saying here, shouldn't prosecute women who seduce boys, female teachers? You think it should be open season?
Well, if they're good looking, they should let them off.
All right, all right. Anything else?
That's all. Have a good day.
Okay, folks, I got a little clip here from Jeff Allen, teenager's first car.
And if you do nothing with your children all week, eat dinner with them, for gosh sakes. The things that come out of their mouths. We're eating dinner one night, my 15-year-old goes, hey, I just thought of this. I go, what is it? He goes, I'll be driving next year. That innocent remark has kept me awake for 6 weeks now. Man, that's scary. It's even more frightening when you look out the living room window on a Saturday, you see him on his bicycle, pop a wheelie and plow right into your mailbox. And he's got his learner's permit, so we let him drive us to church on Sunday. See, that way we can get all our prayer time in before we get there. Sometimes there's so many miracles, we just skip church, go right to the Cracker Barrel. And now that he's going to be getting his driver's license, he wants to get a vehicle, and he's looking at the Sunday paper for the pickup truck he's going to purchase. He's got $9 in a Folgers can in the bedroom. The last truck he looked at was $32,000. I said to my wife, well, that explains his D in math. And I will not be the one to shatter that boy's dream. I'll let the car dealer do it, man. I'll take him down there. Come on, boy, let's go pick you out a truck. Hey, don't forget the coffee can.
Anyway, Jeff Allen, he's pretty good. Okay, so obviously it is totally unacceptable for these teachers to be preying on these kids. And for every teacher that's caught, how many are not caught? Do they catch 90% of them, or do they catch 10% of them? And I mean, it's totally unacceptable. But how did we get to a point in society when and this happens across the United States, any particular day in any state, in any city, you could open the paper and see one of these stories. So, you know, I mean, Aristotle talked about things having a natural direction they head, which I think he calls it the telos. The natural direction that something moves in. And so we have a natural direction this stuff is headed. And I mean, I just kind of curious, you're thinking about the future. What is the future for American marriage and families and everything? So here is one of the arguments, the kind of classic arguments from the right, from the conservatives who say, basically, you know, the left comes up with all of these great ideas that are so horrible in practice that the end result is total chaos and catastrophe. And we've got a phone call. And then the government has to come in. It's not that there's a social revolution. It's just chaos. The government has to come in. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Morning, Kelly. Rob.
Hey, Rob, thanks for the call. Nice to hear your voice, and what's going on?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I'm sitting here going through a schism, I think. I just watched last night that show Guess Who's Coming to Dinner.
Okay.
Are you familiar with it?
Sidney Poitier. Sidney Poitier, one of the great performances, supposedly, in it is a black guy dating a white girl, right?
Right, and they want to get married. He's like, I don't know, 12 years older than her, whatever. But, you know, financially off and, you know, a decent person. And most of the movie, it had Katharine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy.
Yeah.
And it was Tracy's last film. He died 19 days after. Anyway, so, the whole argument back then, that was filmed in 67, I believe.
Okay.
Was just after, you know, not long after Martin Luther King and equal rights and voting and no more, what was that, Jim Crow laws and all
sure,
that.
Sure.
And
So the whole deal was to empower black people to be not recognized as black people, just to be recognized as people.
Sure, the content of your character argument.
Right. And so, you know, that's the way I was brought up was, you know, you still heard the N-word a lot, you know, when I was a kid in North Carolina. But it wasn't the relationship between the whites and blacks there back then in the late 70s was pretty decent. I mean, you know, one of my best friends was black and you know.
Rob, there's literally about 1 minute before the show automatically goes off the air. Is there any chance you could call in with this next at the beginning of next hour? We could kind of carry it on.
Okay.
Because it sounds like you're it's kind of an interesting analysis.
I'm working up to something here.
Obviously,
all
but
this has a point. I know it seems kind of rambling now, but there is a point.
Yeah, we're not going to get there in 30 seconds. Call me back at like 7:05.
Will do.
Thank you. Okay, folks, running out of time here. Unfortunately, sometimes you know I've noticed this. Have you noticed this? A lot of times we get great calls at the very end. It's like people are listening to the show. They don't want it to end because they like the subject, and they want to kind of continue and add their thoughts. Kelly O'Connell, Ryan Adams, stay with me, and we'll be right back. Stay with me, by the way, and we'll pick this up after the break on the hour. Rob, got you here. Hold on just a second.
Cool deal.
It's Kelly, and we're back here. And good morning to you at 7:06 on the 20th of January. I've got Rob back on the line, and he was just starting to make his point when we ran out of time. Okay, Rob, so we were talking about the movie, guess who's – or what was the name of the movie again?
Yeah, I guess he's coming to dinner.
Yeah, and so it's an interracial story, and this is not long after Martin Luther King and everything, and you were talking about your background in North Carolina where it seemed to be racial things were kind of improving after all of the civil rights stuff.
Well, I mean, you know, there was still some unspoken segregation, but it wasn't. You know, I'm speaking, I guess, from the privileged side of it, but, you know, and there was poor neighborhoods of black people and there was poor neighborhoods of white people. They didn't seem to mix much, but we mixed in school and we had pals and buddies that were, you know, different colors than us. But my whole point is, let me throw out another example. Okay. So I'm reading the news, overnight and it seems like, are you familiar with the Star? It's a daily tabloid in England.
Yeah, very much so.
Or the Sun, rather. Not the Star, the Sun.
The Sun, yeah. The Sun ran, didn't they have the topless girl on page 3?
It was called page 3.
Yeah.
And daily they would have a topless girl, you know, not no bottom nudity, and just, you know, nice racks or whatever that people could enjoy. And it had been like that since, like, the late 60s. They had
sure,
that.
Sure, sure, yeah.
So you get these feminists, what Rush would call feminazis, protesting that these girls are being taken advantage of and all of that.
Uh-huh.
And finally put enough pressure on that Murdoch says, okay, well, the heck with it. You know, we're not going to, we're going to have the models, but they're going to be in bikinis or lingerie. They're not going to be topless anymore. So it's kind of like an, you know, 30, 35 year institution gone. And I was watching BBC this morning, and there was a girl who was a frequent model on there being interviewed.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, I wasn't a very good student. I'm not that smart. I wasn't a very good student. You know, and if I hadn't had this job, I would have probably ended up in some dead end menial job, not doing anything with my life. And instead, I got to travel the world and rub elbows with, you know, all these really rich or important or famous people.
Uh-huh.
And it gave me nice employment. So what these feminists have done is not considered the people who are actually affected by their actions, but they were protesting in the name of those people. They didn't consult those people,
sure.
But they were protesting, you know, the name of it, and they're ruining lives now because, you know, eventually that feature is just going to go away totally.
Rob, are you an advocate for? I mean, this is kind of an interesting conversation because I think there's a lot of people who are not, a lot of women and men that are not feminists or feminist sympathizers that would still have a problem with nudity, you know, public nudity or with, you know, selling magazines with nudity. What would you say to them?
I'm not talking pornography here. I'm talking just, you know, a pair of boobs on a
Okay, so how do you define pornography?
I think it's sexual acts.
All right, so I can see your an argument for you that the church itself has over the years had nudes that were that paid for nude sculptures.
Sure, La Pietà, doesn't that show David's you know, and
his
okay,
junk?
So
yeah.
So my main point is that you get you get an idea, and you want to change humanity for the better. You get these groups going after an issue, and then all of a sudden it gets turned on its head, and it becomes something that's totally not what it started out to be. And the Democrats always seem to grab this kind of issue and run with it.
All right.
You know, you look at Al Sharpton and those kind of guys.
Yeah.
You know, and they're doing nothing but sticking up corporations like Jesse Jackson's son there owns a beer distributorship for all of Chicago. Because they threatened Budweiser that they were going to protest and everything about their black hiring ratios if they didn't give Jackson's son the beer distributorship. Now he's got it, and you know that's not a problem for anybody really, except that kind of strong arm stuff. You know, they twist it and they.
All right, let me ask you this.
Ruin it.
I agree that Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, the Reverend Jesse Jackson, Reverend Al Sharpton. Are shakedown artists. As a matter of fact, neither one of them has a theological degree. And Al Sharpton, I mean, if you listen to him, you can kind of hear that he's not a highly educated person. As a matter of fact, I do not know that if he's got a GED even. He didn't finish high school. He certainly has no college degree. He absolutely does not have a theological degree. But he was one of those child preachers at kind of Pentecostal churches. But let me ask you this: what direction should the black movement, the black right movement, be? If it was up to you, what direction would you point these guys in? If you think they've gone off the track, what direction would you point them in?
I would point them to Martin Luther King. He was a Republican. He believed in equal rights for everybody, not some people. What is that they call it when like a school or a workplace has to meet a certain quota of a certain race of people?
I guess it's kind of an affirmative action type thing, I
guess. Affirmative action, right.
Yeah.
That is so destructive because then you get people, like I consider Obama being the affirmative action president because he's not qualified for the job, you know, and he's an embarrassment to himself. You know, when the guy gets home, well, he works, in his home, but, you know, when he goes to bed at night, he can't be feeling good about anything that he's done.
But maybe he feels great. I mean, there are people out there that and you mentioned Rush Limbaugh. I think he's one of them who say that he is he's a radical. He is a communist, and he's trying to destroy the thing that separates America from becoming communist, which would be a functional economy and a functional political system. He's trying to create chaos so that we, to make it easier for us to transition to a socialist government. What do you think about him being maybe a spectacular success from that angle?
Yes and no. I don't think, you know, he's got people pulling his strings. And maybe he is kind of skewed to that way of thinking, but he's not smart enough to think of all that by himself. You know, I've got five points on him in IQ. So, you know, and I wouldn't be able to think of that much stuff that quickly he does.
What is the president's IQ?
130.
Really?
I
never heard his IQ before.
Yeah.
I don't know how they figured that out. But all right. So, do you think that where we're at now in race relations is a good or a bad place?
I think it's terrible.
Why?
I think we've lost ground. If you go back and look at how things were, say, the late 80s, early 90s, things were going pretty good. You know, you still had inner city problems. And, I mean, you know, those are going to take generations to untangle once you start working at it. But nothing's being done to really work at it, you know, other than I guess the war on drugs is even helping, you know, in inner cities. But I think you look at movies like, what was that one with the black cop back in the 70s? Had a pretty catchy theme song.
Yeah, that was, what's his name? That guy was with...
Football player? Wasn't he a football player, the actor? Big James Brown or James... Anyway.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about Eddie, what's his face?
You look at the neighborhoods and the culture that portrayed, you know, and I know it was a Hollywood film or off Hollywood film, but you look at the culture then and race relations, and I think it was much better 20 years later. And I think we've gone back to kind of back to how it was in the late 60s, 70s, you know, instead of how it was in the late 80s and 90s. But I think the pinnacle of good race relations is on a downward slope.
Hold on, Rob, one second. You've called the Kelly O'Connell Show. I'll put you on hold and be right back. All right, Rob, so wrap this puppy up. What do you want people to know?
I think people just need to maybe do a little research. Watch a couple of films on what was being thought 30, 40 years ago, what was being thought and how things were 20 years ago.
We degenerated.
Compare it to how it is now and demand that it goes back to something that everybody can live with and something that everybody's happy with and can build a future together with, not just
trash. Rob, I got another call. Thanks for the call and have a good day. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Tom.
Tom, thanks for the call and what's on your mind?
Was that Shaft you were trying to talk about?
That may have been Shaft. John, that was Richard Roundtree. Richard Roundtree is the only guy that I've ever heard of, the actor, who had to get a double mastectomy, which I find to be very, very strange. But those were.
And I like Rosie O'Greer. Rosie Greer.
Rosie Greer. You're thinking of Rosie O'Donnell and putting Rosie Greer in.
Remember that it was that movie where they had two heads and he was one of them?
Yeah.
A white man and a black man attached.
That was. Anyway, I remember something like that.
I forget the name. When was the first time you had a crush on your teacher?
I don't know, probably third grade. How about you?
Me too, third grade. Mrs. Hirsch. I remember her name. She's a very attractive young teacher.
Was she black? Was she Mrs. Hirsch a Hershey?
Hershey Mark. She was a cutie and a good teacher. What's it called about base nature is in... I think base nature is in every man and woman, and it needs to be overcome by a moral compass.
Well, there is this great thing out there, and actually Sigmund Freud writes about this, but it's an idea that was out there already. It's called sublimation, the way that civilization is created is that the sexual desire is sublimated. It is not totally expressed. You know, it's expressed in marriage, but that sex drive that has so much power attached to it is driven underground in the person, and then that helps motivate them to go, take over nature and civilize and create a working society.
Mm-hmm. Well, remember that song by Sting, where he's a teacher and he's looking at the young girl?
Wrapped around my finger.
Yes, I know it. Okay, I'll talk to you later.
Thanks a lot, Tom. Have a good day. All right, folks, so is this society totally off the track? I think that one of the things that Rob, the point that Rob was making that I think most people will identify is at some level we're kind of a miserable society now. I'll give you an example locally. If you do something, you know, hold a door for somebody or whatever, there's a high percentage chance that that individual will not say thank you. Now, whether that's just because have bad manners locally, I don't think we're bad people, but, or there is this argument that came out of highly destructive set of arguments that came out of feminism, one of which was don't let men treat you as if you're different. So we get rid of these, you know, untold generations of kind of, you know, the civility, chivalry or whatever. And now everybody's on the same level. Nobody feels special. And there's no acknowledgement of the difference between men and women, which is there a difference between men and women? If there's not, I mean, if I can prove that there is a difference physically and psychologically, what's wrong with acknowledging that within our manners, within our mores or whatever? But I think to sum up where Rob's coming from, whether you want to apply it just racially, I think in general we're miserable because we're always being told how horrible the society is and we're kind of living it out. And it seems like this racial argument is like Groundhog Day. It's always the same thing. There's not any black movies in the Academy right now, in the Academy Awards, therefore it's racism. It's always this, you know, this immediate assumption that anything like that has to be driven by racism. And, you know, this is really it's the side effect of cultural Marxism, the political correctness movement, that I think one of the key effects of it is to drive misery into people and keep them constantly dissatisfied, not dissatisfied in a positive way, but in a negative way. There's no way to really solve the problem because we're a bunch of racist, hypocrite, greedy, capitalist, selfish, you know. One of the interesting things about the time we're living is dating and courtship is just out the window. Everything is boiled down to sex. It's like everything is boiled down to its constituent elements. Anyway, here's Ryan Adams' Shadows. It's a new album, Ryan Adams. It's beautiful stuff. I heard it when I was in Home Depot yesterday, as a matter of fact. We'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell, 722 AM 1450, 523-1450. Is the number to call in, 805-6180 to text. I'll read your text when I come back. I promise.
In the cutting room, straight to the floor, before the film was through. The day in my head, that field of brazen white, come a little closer, honey, and touch the fire.
folks, let me get to a few headlines for you, just so you feel like you're informed of the larger world. And we've got from the head of Judge Report, American Sniper has been under fire. And American Sniper made by last night something like almost $110 million over the weekend. It's an extraordinary amount of business, and it's Clint Eastwood's film. If you haven't seen it, get out there and see it. It is a very well-made movie. It's not just a story. It's a good movie, and it is about the number one sniper in American history. I think 160 confirmed kills, and he kept going back over to the Middle East because he wanted to protect his boys. But it's an interesting film, and I think what is one of the things that's interesting about it is that I believe people are going to it because in the same way that I was talking about, I think there's a lot of unhappiness out there in the society. There's a lot of dissatisfaction. People who understand that this is the greatest nation in history don't understand why we don't talk about it as if it is, that it's always the next terrible thing that America has done, the racism, the greed, the selfishness, the violence, all these different things. Chorus of criticism is led from the left. Let me ask you something. What does the left hope to achieve? And this is something that I'd asked before. If Harry Reid, who's probably not going to be in office after this next election, and Nancy Pelosi had their way, if the president had their way, what would America look like? Does America, in their opinion, need to die? It's weird when you see a top-level politician doing things that would seem to make the undertaking of their nation less likely in the future. What is motivating it? You know, is there any thought behind it? Are they just the face of a very emotional and kind of almost incoherent movement, you know? Anyway, here's some more headlines. New police radar can see inside your homes. They've had these for a couple of years. There is Billy Crystal. The actor says, "Stop shoving gay sex scenes in my face." He was the first gay character on TV. He's not gay, but he played a gay character. Here is Iran general killed with Hezbollah fighters in Israeli raid. Iron Dome deployed as North braces for response. The Iron Dome is the missile defense in Israel. Millennials set to outnumber baby boomers. Border agents fire warning shots at drug smuggling boat off Southern California is another story. And here is even for active people, a long sit shortens life, erodes health. So I guess the point is to get up and move around, and you will be happier and healthier even if you walk just a few minutes a day. So they say to get off your rear end. There was a collapse of I-75 overpass in Cincinnati, and they say that some of these bridges around America are falling apart. A Chinese economy expanding at slowest rate in quarter of a century. There was a guy prosecuting the Argentinian leader, he ended up dead, and they say it looks like a suicide, but nobody knows. Now, listen to this. And that, when I thought of this, I thought of this video that came out with Bill Ayers' people, the Weather Underground. ISIS plans on killing hundreds of millions in religious cleansing. Think about this. There is this very bizarre this kind of weird echo between far leftism, Marxism, and Islam. They both have no problem killing people and killing hundreds of millions of people. Where's my proof of that? Look at the SSR and China, two countries that are among the original Marxist nations. They killed hundreds of millions of people in the name of the state, for the vast majority of them, for absolutely no reason other than they could kill them. A German embedded reporter, and this is from Breitbart, says ISIS plans on killing hundreds of millions in a religious cleansing. And Jürgen Totenhofer, kind of an unfortunate name, the first Western reporter to embed with the Islamic State fighters and not be killed in the process, talked about his time to Al Jazeera in this group of people. And I've got that clip right here.
Jürgen Totenhofer is a German journalist who was able to embed with Islamic State fighters. Totenhofer lived side by side with the jihadist fighters for 10 days in Mosul, Iraq. Totenhofer stated of ISIS, quote, "They were talking about killing hundreds of millions. They were enthusiastic about it, and I just cannot understand that."
All right, so he says that I always ask them about the value of mercy in Islam, but I didn't see any mercy in their behavior. He said, something that I don't understand at all is the enthusiasm in their plan of religious cleansing, planning to kill the non-believers. They will also kill Muslim Democrats because they believe that non-ISIL Muslims put the laws of human beings above the commandments of God. And he said he was shocked at how willing to kill the ISIS fighters are. They were ready to commit genocide. They were talking about killing hundreds of millions. They were enthusiastic about it, and I just cannot understand that. He says the Islamic State is much stronger than we think, that the recruiting has brought jihadists from across the globe, and each day hundreds of new enthusiastic fighters are arriving. There is an incredible enthusiasm that I have never seen in any other war zone that I have been to. All right, so you look at their worldview. How does a person from the Middle East who's a Muslim explain in their own mind the failure of Islam to create better countries and better societies? And they see that the West is filled with infidels and with, in their opinion, devil worshipers, the great white Satan is America. And yet we come up with so many scientific and technological innovations that make life easier and cheaper and better for the whole world. And yet what does Islam come up with? Repressive societies based on foreign philosophies. There's Marxism and socialism in every one of these countries. It's countries, states that are dominated by the state, and even the media dominates these people's thinking. The media is just propaganda over there. They live miserable, unhappy lives. They want to get out. They want to kill the unbelievers. They want to create a perfect world. Absolutely terrifying. Kelly O'Connell, and we'll take a little break here. And here's a little more Teenager's First Car, the clip from Jeff Allen. He's pretty good. We'll take a break after that. Kelly O'Connell, 734. Yes, I'll do the text when we come back.
And I suggested a used car, a really used car. You know, he goes, I'll never drive a junk. Okay, paper boy. What's wrong with driving a junk? I'll tell you something. I've owned a lot of junks in my life. You want to drive stress-free, junks, man. Cave your quarter panels and cave your bumper. Merging is never a problem. Especially if your bumper's hanging on by a bungee cord, man. It's just people go out of the way to let you slide right in. And it's only natural. You got a nice car, somebody hits it, it'll ruin your day. You got a junk and somebody hits it, man, it makes your day. Guy that hitches on the phone with his insurance agent, man, and you're on the phone with a travel agent. Comes back, is that where I hit you? Oh, no, I bought a home entertainment center with that dent. You were kind enough to hit me in the Bahamas trip right over here, man. Yeah, who are you kidding? That repair check is not going for one repair. It's like finding a bag of cash on the side of the highway.
Good morning. It's 7:37. Flying the friendly skies. And, you know, I just find it so bizarre that, you know, you remember that there was this Weather Underground clip, and they were talking about how the people that were part of this group that wanted to take over the country for Marx, they were willing to kill up to 25 million people. And it's like, you know, why? why is it so important to kill people? And I would say, you know, at some level, you're talking about Islam and you're talking about, you know, the Muslim state. There's something that is totally, I would say, you know, you've got a bad theory of government when you have to kill millions of people just to get them to go along with it, right? So here is, this is just remind you of this clip from Bill Ayers that they had, this guy had mentioned how they were, you know, Bill Ayers was part of this group. Bill Ayers is the, like, supposed to be the mentor to Barack Obama in all things political. And Bill Ayers was part of a group that said that they would have to get rid of at least or up to 25 million American capitalists to retrain everybody.
I brought up the subject of what's going to happen after we take over the government.
I just, well, let me reboot this thing here. This guy's name, I can't remember, but he was, I think he was in the FBI or something. And he was a person who infiltrated this group and these radicals when there was a lot of, you know, they were bombing and doing stuff in America, trying to have a revolution.
I brought up the subject of what's going to happen after we take over the government. You know, we become responsible then for administrating, you know, 250 million people. And there was no answers. No one had given any thought to economics. How are you going to clothe and feed these people? The only thing that I could get was that they expected that the Cubans and the North Vietnamese and the Chinese and the Russians would all want to occupy different portions of the United States. They also believed that their immediate responsibility would be to protect against what they called the counter-revolution. And they felt that this counter-revolution could best be guarded against by creating and establishing re-education centers in the Southwest, where we would take all the people who needed to be re-educated into the new way of thinking and teach them how things were going to be. I ask, well, what is going to happen to those people that we can't re-educate, that are die-hard capitalists? And the reply was that they'd have to be eliminated. And when I pursued this further, they estimated that they would have to eliminate 25 million people in these re-education centers. And when I say eliminate, I mean kill 25 million people. I want you to imagine sitting in a room with 25 people, most of which have graduate degrees from Columbia and other well-known educational centers, and hear them figuring out the logistics for the elimination of 25 million people. And they were dead serious.
That is bizarre, isn't it? And I would say to you, why is there this weird kind of coincidence or this weird why is Marxism at that level and Islam, like, boil it down to the most basic thing. You could argue that ISIS is either a weird cult that has no historical roots, or it is at some level it represents the constituency of Islam. You could say the Weather Underground the same way. It's either just a weird thing that Bill Ayers was involved in and some of these other radicals, and it has no connection to Marxism, or at some level is represents Marxism at its most basic level. And but I would ask you, why is it when you boil these ideas down, they both look almost exactly the same? How is it possible that the most irreligious and atheistic movement in history, Marxism, looks exactly like, at the operative level, the most overly religious and the most pious and most demonious and judgmental and in-your-face religious movement? It's weird, isn't it? I would argue, my perspective would be that somehow the West developed something based on truth. The truth is that we human beings love liberty, and they love to make their own decisions, and they don't want to be forced into things or forced into them or be killed. That it's what we have developed in the West is unique in human history, and we need to guard it with our lives. Kelly O'Connell, here's a little bit more Ryan Adams, and I'll take you into break. We'll come back at 743-523-1450 to call in. Yes, I'm reading the texts when I come back, I swear. It's Kelly here, and good morning, 7:45, KOBE AM 1450. Okay, here we go. Is David Gutierrez related to Joni Gutierrez? I don't know. If you know, call in. Obama has never released his IQ info. He just allowed his cheerleader to assume that he has a high IQ. That's pretty funny. All right, so, yeah, that is, of course, I'm pulling up everybody's favorite clip here. And in my own unable to multitask way, I'll play that for you in just a second.
Well,
heard his IQ. I don't believe his IQ is 130, but I could be mistaken. I don't think it is how smart you are. How high your IQ is, it's what you do with it. And I'm not suggesting that someone who is, you know, mildly mentally retarded, IQ of 75 or whatever, can do physics. But whether it was true or not, they say that, and here we've got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Karen. Morning. Hey, that was my text. And, you know, the thing about his IQ, Kelly, is that, even they Charlie Rose had somebody on his program, and this guy, he was a big damn, he was talking about the, you know, how brilliant and just how smart this guy was.
I've got that clip right here. You want to hear it?
Yeah, go for it. Let people hear it.
Hold on, folks. Here we go. And I had to save this myself to the internet because it was taken down across the globe.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
I finally put it up. So anyway, I can have it. Here it is.
Well,
not bad.
And I think even aside from the issue of electing the first African-American president and whatever one's partisan views, this is a guy whose IQ is off the charts. I mean, you cannot say that he is anything but a very serious and capable leader. And, you know, you and I have talked about this for years. You know,
well, what is his IQ?
Allows those people to become president. Those people meaning people that smart and that capable.
What is his IQ?
Pardon?
What is his IQ?
I would say I'd say he's probably the smartest guy ever to become president.
That's all I asked what his IQ was.
Yeah, that I don't know. I'd have to think of someone who has more expertise. What do you think it is?
I don't know.
Yeah.
All right, so there you've got this conversation with Michael Beschloss. Now here is...
That's right, and Imus.
Yeah, Imus, and here's the thing. I don't think that Michael Beschloss's reputation has ever recovered from this, but I mean, do you remember the days when Obama was first running, and it was this, here is this thing that the left does, the Marxist machinery or the socialist machinery always picks the greatest person, the smartest person alive, the greatest person in history, there is presented to the public that way. And that's done with Bill Clinton, it was done with Hillary Clinton, done with Barack Obama, but if look into these Marxist regimes, Mao became a god, Stalin and Lenin, they were all presented to the people as being a genius beyond compare.
That's it, with nothing to back it up. And you know how this all came about is, remember when Peter was still on the radio with Keith?
Yeah.
Peter was going on and on about how stupid Perry and Bush were because he was, you know, reading their transcripts and how smart Obama was. And I called in and I told him it's very easy for them to say that, because at least Bush and Perry were bold and confident enough to release their transcripts, which were meteoric, so what? But Obama has never released his transcripts, any of his papers written, nothing. And so it's very easy to raise him on this high platform when he won't release any of his info.
Yeah, and I thought it was bizarre that these people were praising what a great speaker he was when he was reading his stuff off the teleprompter. I mean, I'll give him props for being a good teleprompter reader, but the traditional classical view of rhetoric was the summary of all of the everything that a human being could do was summed up in rhetoric. And these ancient speakers like Demosthenes would and Cicero and anybody who was a great speaker would memorize line for line, word for word, what they were going to say. And Obama not only doesn't do that, he doesn't write his own speeches, but in fact, when he's off the teleprompter, he sounds like, just sounds like anybody that you'd pull off the street and ask a question. He doesn't seem any more even informed. And, you know, with all of the recent statements that Obama just found out about this today, he's watching some sporting event, and in the middle, you know, we make an announcement, you know, so and such has been, you know, the economy is down 20%. Oh my God, I just found out about, you know, he is, it's almost become a joke.
It just falls in line with the Democratic rhetoric about, you know, racism and anti-female, and that their people are just the smartest, the brightest, and our side are just idiots.
Here is dumbos. The left drives itself off of the most basic myths. Yep. You know, we get rid of Zeus and Apollo, and we put in their place these myths about how you're a leftist, you're a Democrat, or you're a liberal because you have a higher IQ. You've evolved your brain up, or you happen to be born with a better brain, and therefore you get educated because you're more competent at school, and you are then ushered into this arena of truth. And that's clearly how they represent themselves all the time. And you're a conservative, or you're on the right because you're not smart enough to realize the truth. This is clearly, this is very simplistic. It is like, you know, reading a three-year-old a fairy tale. It is no more advanced than that, but that is what was used to prop up this guy's presidency and candidacy from the beginning.
Agreed. But anyway, let anybody call in and try to back up how smart this guy is, because they can't back it up.
Give me a debate here. Okay, thanks a lot, Karen. Have a good
day.
All right, bye-bye. Folks, a little take a little break here, and we'll be – oh, and we do have another call. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
Kelly's Bill.
Yeah.
I don't know how smart the man is, but I do know he's exceptionally deceptive, manipulative, and treacherous.
He's got a PhD in being tricky.
Yes, and just remember this, too. You can be really smart and still believe in the wrong thing.
That's so true. I mean, anytime a cult member shows up on your door, and I'm recalled to the guy came to my door and told me I was a prostate, and I'm like, what? This guy in this cult, and I'm like, you know what? I have a prostate, but I'm not a prostate. He stomped off and said, you're a prostate. Anyway, Bill, thanks a lot for the call, and folks, we'll be right back.
Options. Having one.
Folks, it's Kelly here, 755. The moment you've all been waiting for here, it is weird news time. And police say father called officers to supervise him as he disciplined his daughter, Okeechobee, Florida. Police say a father called officers and asked him to supervise him while he disciplined his young daughter in Okeechobee, Florida, in December of last year. A 12-year-old girl was involved in an argument with her sister. After the argument, the girl's father wanted to discipline her, but he didn't want to go too far, and he didn't want to get charged for it. So he called the cops. They showed up, and they watched him give approximately 12 spankings, and they gave their thumbs-up approval and said, you know what, is an appropriate number of spankings. What do you think about that? All right. In Detroit, a cop was rehired after cutting off a woman's weave. Michigan police officer Bernadette Nahor has been reinstated after cutting the hair off a detained woman, Charta Gregory's head, in 2013. And Nager has been admitted back to the suburban Detroit Police Department with copay against the will of her department. And Nahor's attorney said she was completely exonerated and she had every right to cut her weave off of the 22-year-old Gregory at the Warren Jail. And so the lady woke up in a hotel room without knowledge of how she got there and flipped out, believing she'd been drugged. She was charged with trashing the hotel room and kicking the window out of the response vehicle. And so the lady was fighting with a cop, and the cop grabbed her hair and apparently pulled it off. Britney Spears' ex-boyfriend killed by Taliban in Afghanistan. That's sad. A pilot who dated Britney Spears during her time in rehab, John Sundahl, was flying near Kabul. He worked as a private helicopter pilot when a missile hit his craft and blew him up, and Britney is devastated. He was a lovely guy, although she cannot remember him. Man calls police. That was a joke. Man calls police over foxes having an abnormally long sex in his garden in the United Kingdom. A flustered pensioner, in other words, a retiree, said he had to make an emergency call to the police. There were foxes going at it all day long, and the guy got upset, and they called the police, who ignored him and even laughed into the phone. Human cannonball died after 1 week in the job. Inquest jury showed in video of dramatic moment when the safety net collapses. Matthew Cranch in England suffered multiple injuries when he fell to the ground and was fired from a cannon. What did it sound like? I got it right here, folks. You can hear the people saying 3, 2, 1.
Guy in charge of firing is going to do one bottle of check on the high explosive. That's going to be 2, 1, fire!
All right, that's the sound of getting shot out of a human cannon, being a human cannonball and not having a net to catch you. I'll take you out of here, folks, with Ryan Adams Shadows. Enjoyed the show today. We'll meet back here again and pick it up tomorrow morning anew. Here's Ryan Adams Shadows. Have a great day. Kelly O'Connell, KOBE Radio, at 7:59 on the button. Shadows.
Heaven waves in the darkness of the room. And the shaking at the gates from here to Moxon. Cold front walls in like a black balloon. And it sinks into your soul when you start.